Good evening. It is 7 o'clock in the Midwest, and this is KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week for Monday, February 8th. I'm Dennis Hart, welcoming you to another in our series of programs in this time slot that will explore and analyze what's going on at Iowa's state capitol, legislation that's in the works, legislation that could be in the works, and what it means for all of us. As always, I'm joined by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Good evening, Laura. It is great to be with you again on this really, really cold winter evening.
Nice to be here, Dennis.
I hope you're staying warm wherever you are.
Absolutely.
It was another hot week in the state legislature, as it was the week before. And it was also a week for the coronavirus in the legislature. Several state House of Representatives members not able to take part in in-person meetings because of coronavirus issues. And that brought up again the issue of the lack of rules in the House for wearing masks. All of this led to a whole lot of things. Take it from there, Laura.
Well, actually, just this afternoon, another notice went out about a case, a coronavirus case, in somebody associated with the Iowa House of Representatives. They didn't say who. So I think that's six confirmed cases of people who are somehow involved. We only know right now of one state legislator who's tested positive. That's Democrat Amy Nielsen. And she said that she was upset that she feels that she was exposed because of the lack of safety protocols in the state house. Generally speaking, the Democrats wear masks all the time when they're on site. Some of the Republicans wear masks fairly consistently. Some of them don't. And so it's just a point of contention. They're not required to, and legislative staff are not required to, and some do not. And it's, even though it's a large space, the House chamber and the Senate chamber, and some of the rooms are somewhat large, the ventilation systems are old, and, you know, air circulates in a room. So that's, there was a lot of concern about that last week. And one of the Ames state representatives, Beth Wessel-Crichel, found a way to make herself heard.
Let's talk about her. She staged a protest associated with the wearing of masks, and her protest involved the wearing of jeans. How did that work?
Yes. Well, the Iowa House and Senate have both, for decades, have had protocols about appropriate dress that can be worn in the chamber. And one of the longstanding rules is nothing with denim. And Beth Wessel-Crichel knows this. She's served for about 20 years now. And it's just, I've never seen anyone actually challenge the rules. But the House Speaker Pat Grassley and the Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker had said, they had told reporters, and they had said in some other public statements, that they didn't feel that they could require masks on the floor of the House or Senate, because these people are elected to represent their districts, and they just, you know, they don't have any control over that. And so Representative Wessel-Crichel, just to make a point, she wore jeans in the chamber last week during debate, and the speaker refused to recognize her to speak on a bill. He said that she was not conforming to protocol. And so he did say that she was entitled to vote on the bills that came up, but he didn't recognize her to speak. And she was just trying to make the point that if you can require people not to wear jeans, and if you can require men to wear jackets and ties, you can also require people to wear a cloth face covering.
So what effect do you think her protest did have or is going to have?
Well, it got some national media attention. I mean, it got a lot of attention in the Iowa media, but even the Washington Post picked it up, that the House Speaker says he can't require masks, but he shut someone down for wearing jeans. So I don't think that, I mean, it's not changing anything in terms of the House or Senate rules, but I think she made her point. As I think I mentioned last week, there have been some times in debate where people, if it gets a little bit heated, somebody might call a point of order on someone else. And traditionally, then the Speaker calls those representatives down to the well. That's the area right in front of the speaker's desk. And a couple of times when a speaker, Grassley, called people down to the well, the Democrats said that they weren't coming unless he put a mask on. So, I mean, I think it's something that people will continue to raise, especially if we continue to see more positive cases associated with the legislature.
And while this was going on, the governor announced late last week that she was lifting mask restrictions around the state effective yesterday. And that was only days after she had complained that the state was not receiving its fair share of vaccination doses. Today, the Federal Centers for Disease Control reported that Iowa ranked among the bottom of all states in its ability to administer the coronavirus vaccinations it is getting. Only 7.5% of state residents have received at least one dose. Apparently, the governor did this, from what I'm reading, without consulting health department officials. What are you hearing?
Well, this was a big surprise. Generally, when the governor has changed her COVID-19 mitigation measures, either to dial them up or to dial them back, she's generally announced that at one of her televised press conferences. And she did have one press conference last week. It was on Thursday. Mostly she was talking about the vaccination issue and complaining that the state hadn't been allocated its fair share of vaccines. She didn't really address why about a third of the vaccines we have not been injected into people's arms. But so on Friday after 4 p.m., when suddenly this news release came out that she had issued a new public health disaster proclamation, it was a big surprise to everybody. I mean, I didn't know anybody who saw that coming. And she lifted not only the limited mask requirement, which was not really a mandate, but it was a requirement for certain types of indoor activities and settings, but all capacity restrictions on all kinds of businesses, all requirements that tables be spaced out at restaurants and bars, all requirements that anybody wear masks in restaurants and bars at any time. And so she dropped almost all of the mitigation measures in that. The governor left in place quite a bit of the regulatory relief associated with the pandemic and a few other administrative things, but it was really a surprise. And today even the White House chief of staff, Ron Klain, said, you know, that he really wishes that states wouldn't be relaxing restrictions right now because we need to stay on top of community transmission.
The blowback on this has been pretty severe from health people. The Ames Tribune is going to report tomorrow that Dr. John Passion, the head of the Story County Board of Health, has called this decision wrong, dangerous, the wrong time to do this, etc. Board of Supervisors chairwoman is saying we are going to keep our restrictions on, and the city of Ames is going to. Frank County, the mayor of Des Moines, said his mask restrictions in that city are going to remain on. Has there been blowback from any lawmakers in the legislature about this?
Well, I want to say that the Story County Public Health Chair, Dr. Passion, he has really been outspoken, and I think that he is one of the more outspoken county leaders on this issue. I remember that he was very critical of Iowa State University allowing in-person fans at the football games this year. Generally speaking, I mean, the Democratic legislators, a lot of them have been critical. The Republicans have not said anything about it that I've seen, actually a few welcomed the lifting of restrictions. But what I found interesting was that today, the director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, Kelly Garcia, had a phone call with Democratic legislators. She does these periodically, and she, for some reason, does separate phone calls for Republicans and Democrats. I don't really know. I don't really know what the origin of that is. It seems like it would be better to talk to all the legislators together to make sure everyone gets the same message. But in any case, several of the Democratic legislators tweeted after this phone call that she had said that the Iowa Department of Public Health was not consulted on whether to lift the mask mandate and the other changes that the governor instituted. And so, of course, you know, all the reporters rushed to try to confirm that. And the statement that the Department of Public Health sent to all of us said, IDPH advises the governor daily on the state's COVID-19 response. As the governor has done from the beginning of this pandemic, she has adjusted the mitigation efforts based on the availability of healthcare resources. So it wasn't a denial. It certainly didn't say there, but they certainly weren't out there saying, oh, yes, we advised her to do that, or we encouraged her to do that. They just said, well, she's adjusted it. And based on the availability of healthcare resources seems to be a reference to the hospitalization numbers, which are quite low now. They're, I think, at their lowest point since late September. But, you know, they could spike back up. The concern is that, especially if we see more transmissible variants of the virus, that they could spike back up. I think that what the governor may be banking on is that if most of the nursing home residents have been vaccinated at this point, and that population is so vulnerable and accounts for quite a large share of the hospitalizations and deaths, I think that the governor seems to be rolling the dice on the idea that, you know, even if there's a little more community transmission, it's not going to lead to a huge spike in hospitalizations like we saw in October and November. And, you know, I mean, we all hope that that's true.
You know, one of the interesting things about her timing on this is that it took place, the restrictions came off Sunday morning, right before the Super Bowl was played, so that there could be perhaps a number of super spreader events in Ames, in bars or restaurants or around the state, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, there were no restrictions during the Super Bowl.
Right. A lot of Chiefs fans in the state. So
yes.
Generally speaking, you know, I think a lot of people get together to watch the Super Bowl regardless. But yes, that was a lot of the Democrats who I saw criticize this move on Friday and Saturday, a lot of them mentioned that this was going to be a disaster with the Super Bowl. And, you know, the CDC was encouraging people not to get together with people outside their household to watch the Super Bowl. So, I mean, we'll just have to see and hope. You know, like you said, Iowa is not doing so well in terms of the administration of the vaccines. And so given that we have such a low percentage of the population vaccinated, the Biden administration has encouraged people to just hunker down and really wear masks for another few months, get through this flu season and get to a point where more people are vaccinated. And I guess we're going to test the opposite approach to that.
There is word that the state could receive a somewhat quicker rollout of the vaccine starting this week because Hy-Vee, among others, taking part in what's called the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program, which is going to send vaccines straight from the CDC to pharmacies. From what you know, is that going to have any kind of impact whatsoever?
Well, I mean, we'll see how Hy-Vee distributes it. One of the controversial issues that a number of Iowa media have reported on in the last week, including myself, is that a number of the either pharmacies or healthcare providers who have been given allocations of vaccine are prioritizing their own customers or their own patients. And so they're going down the list. This is true of Mercy Care, Unity Point, the Iowa Clinic, and Genesis Health in Eastern Iowa. A number of these organizations are going down their list and they're calling people in their own databases who fall into eligible groups. But what that means is if you don't regularly see a healthcare provider, then even if you're in a group over age 65 or one of the other populations that right now is eligible to get the vaccine, you might call and the pharmacy might say, well, no, you're not an existing customer and we won't schedule an appointment for you. And that really seems to raise a lot of problems with equity. And so I hope that Hy-Vee won't do that. I have not seen any announcement from Hy-Vee on how they plan to schedule appointments. And I hope it doesn't prioritize people who have already done business with Hy-Vee in the past.
This is not unique to Iowa. The exact same thing is happening in California. I went to my healthcare provider last week, who's part of a major group, and he said, yeah, they're going to perhaps get some vaccine, but it's going to be limited to members of the group. And I said, oh, great. Well, how many members are in your group? Oh, about 80,000. So it may be a while for me to get on a list, but we're also going to get some vaccines in pharmacy. CVS out here is supposed to get a vaccine dose or however many, we don't know, starting tomorrow. But, you know, the problem is, of course, people signing up. You have to be quick.
The governor of Colorado. Yes. And the governor of Colorado issued an executive order because this sort of thing was happening there as well. So he issued an executive order that said you have to, if you have allocations of vaccine, you have to make appointments available to anyone who qualifies for it. And you can't limit it to people who are already in your database.
Now, you reported last week, staying on the coronavirus story, that there is it's true, that of those who have received the vaccine in Iowa, people of color are being vaccinated at much lower rates than white people. Explain that, please.
Yes. Well, there could be a lot of factors playing into this, but Sarah Ann Willett, who's an Ames resident, she has been keeping track of all of this on the on her Iowa COVID tracker website, and she found that for white people, about 80, it was about 80 people per thousand white people in Iowa have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine. And for Latinos, it was only 24 people per 1,000 population. For Black Iowans, it was about 31 doses per 1,000 population. And for Asians, it was about 41 doses. So white people are being vaccinated at about twice the rate as Iowans of Asian descent, and triple the rate of Iowans of Latinos, and almost triple the rate of Black Iowans. And there could be a lot of factors playing into it. One issue could be that since they prioritize the nursing home population, and nursing home residents in Iowa are an overwhelmingly white population, it could be that now that they're vaccinating a larger group of Iowans, that maybe the racial disparities will become smaller. My concern is that given the preferential treatment of people who already have an established relationship with a pharmacy or a healthcare provider, I'm concerned that marginalized populations who already don't have regular access to healthcare, that will be even harder for them to get a vaccine. And those populations could be disproportionately people of color. But it's something I'll be keeping an eye on definitely in the weeks and months to come.
There have been a number of reports nationally that the Black population Many members of the younger members of the black population in this country are quite reluctant, perhaps, to get the vaccine because of a complete distrust in government.
Yes, and I haven't seen any reporting specifically about black Iowans. I know that there have been some black healthcare workers in Iowa who have tried to post on social media, for instance, pictures of themselves getting the vaccine and encouraging people to get the vaccine. I know there were some local efforts in Waterloo to increase trust in the vaccine. And that's, you know, you can, it's understandable why in some communities there is that level of distrust, because the medical community hasn't always been ethical in their dealings with African Americans.
Yes. Let's remind people at 15 and a half minutes after the hour on this Monday night that they and you are listening to KHOI's Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart, along with Laura Bellin. We're here every Monday night now talking about what's going on in the state capitol. And as you can tell, a lot is going on in the state capitol these days in the legislature. One of the things last week, Republicans in the state Senate unveiled a plan to condition school districts' eligibility for extra coronavirus-related money to the district's compliance in offering in-person classes. This is one of those things that the governor has been pushing forever, get kids back in classes. And now the Republicans in the state Senate are trying to really put some pressure on. Let's talk about that.
Yes, and that bill just got through the Senate Appropriations Committee just this afternoon, actually. And the wording of it, I mean, the increase in school funding overall would be about a 2.2% increase in state funding, which is less than what a lot of educators were hoping for. And then there would be this extra bonus of $65 per student, but it would only be for school districts that were compliant with the governor's directive on having at least 50% of classes in person. And really the main district that affects is the Des Moines Public Schools, which are by far the largest school district in the state, almost twice as large as the second largest, about 30,000 students. And so that's a lot of money that students, that the schools would be losing out on, the students would be missing out on. And, you know, it's unfortunate because the students didn't have any control last September and October over the district administrators and the school board's decision to stay 100% remote against the governor's wishes. And so the Democrats, and particularly the Democrats who represent Des Moines area districts in the Iowa House and Senate, are really upset about this, but they don't have the votes to stop it. So I think this looks like, from what I saw anyway, in the Iowa Senate Appropriations Committee, it was a party line vote, and I expect this to be on the governor's desk before long.
As we've said before, there is no question that Republicans have control, almost complete control of the legislature, 59-41 in the state House, 32-18 in the Senate. So there's not a lot Democrats can really do to stop things.
Not much. I mean, there are a few every once in a while. I mean, you still will hear rumblings. I've heard that there are some legislators not happy with the whatever you call it, want to call it, the voucher proposal or the education savings account proposal we discussed last week. But I find it hard to believe that there wouldn't be enough Republican votes to pass that in both chambers.
Same time last week, state university presidents said the coronavirus had gutted their budgets, University of Iowa, University of Northern Iowa, Iowa State University, to the tune of many millions of dollars. And they said they need more money from the Board of Regents and eventually from the state legislature. What kind of reception do you think the state universities are going to get at the state legislature?
You know, it's been really rough going for the state universities the last decade or so. And part of that is just the reality that the Democrats represent most of the districts that cover large areas of people associated with the university. So not just students, but faculty and staff, where most of those people live. And really, we do have a fairly large state surplus ending balance now. And I think that, you know, the universities are hoping that some of that money can be tapped, the rainy day money can be tapped for this. But I haven't seen anything indicating that the Republican education committees are going to be supportive of that. I haven't, of course, the budget numbers have not come out yet. There certainly hasn't been any talk of a special appropriation for the state universities, and the appropriations committees haven't come close to taking up bills for higher education funding for next year. But I don't think it's very likely that they're going to get a lot of extra funding.
Mm. At the same time, an Iowa House subcommittee last week advanced a bill that would prohibit public colleges and universities from requiring students to wear masks off campus. Can you give us more on that?
Yes. Well, again, this is people upset over ordinances in some college towns that are designed to keep students from spreading the virus and upset about university policies. And my understanding is that at least one of the proposals floating around would not only apply to public universities, but would also disadvantage the private colleges and universities that had taken steps to enforce COVID, you know, adherence to COVID safety measures off campus, that it could cause problems with that their students perhaps not being eligible for the tuition tax credit. And that'll be a real battle. I mean, again, I don't think the Democrats have the votes to stop that, but we'll see how far that goes. I mean, that there may be enough Republicans still representing portions of areas not far from college campuses that they could stop that. If certainly the private colleges, a lot of those private college towns are in Republican represented districts.
Let's move off the coronavirus in the 5 minutes or so that we have left in the broadcast tonight. A story that you wrote about on your Bleeding Heartland website. Iowa State University's switch to the Workday software program led to the university's failure to issue a key financial report on time. So this sounds like it is a big problem. What's going on there?
Yes. Well, it's one of these things. It's big in the, if you follow the bond markets, this is a big deal. The comprehensive annual financial report is something that all state and local governments are supposed to compile. And people in the municipal bonds markets watch this closely. And Iowa hasn't missed a deadline for publishing this thing in decades. I mean, there's no firm deadline, but generally speaking, they're supposed to come out by 6 months after the end of the fiscal year. Excuse me. So that would be by the end of December. And I learned a couple of weeks ago that Iowa's report still wasn't out. And the reason is Iowa State, which normally would get its data to the state agencies by October, still hasn't finished compiling all that year-end data.
Laura, just take a drink there. And she is right now. I'm just going to fill a little bit of time while she moistens her breath there. This happens to all of us. It's 22 minutes after the hour. It's 7 o'clock on this Monday night. So the Workday program, again, what is the ramification of missing this deadline?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have a major ramification, but if it goes on too long, it could affect Iowa's credit rating. It could affect the Board of Regents or the Iowa State University's credit rating. So it could affect the interest rate that we pay on bonds. And generally speaking, the part that's concerning to a lot of people is that the state of Iowa is committed to purchasing this Workday computer system and moving to using Workday for human resources and accounting over the next couple of years. And if it's causing this many problems for Iowa State, which had a years-long transition of bringing it in, what does that mean when the entire state government is going to be running on Workday? So that's really the concern. The Republicans have I haven't seen any Republican legislators react to this. They actually, in the Senate Appropriations Committee, just passed a bill to allocate money to continue to pay that state contract with Workday. So they're not backing away from Workday in any sense. But Iowa State University, as far as I understand, they still have not submitted that data to the state. And again, this is data that they usually send by October 1st.
Okay, let's talk briefly about another story that you wrote about just today. An Iowa vendor gave Governor Reynolds and other officials talking points before filming a promotional video for the company on state property last year. It's a Utah-based firm, happens to have received a $26 million no-bid contract to create the Test Iowa program. Tell us about this.
Yes, well, the existence of the video was first reported by the Associated Press last month, but the Test Iowa contract involved three Utah-based companies, and last summer, unbeknownst to anybody at the time, one of these companies that runs the state website, the data dashboard, they arranged to have a film crew come to the state capitol, film Dr. Padotti, the state medical director, Governor Reynolds, and also the governor's chief operating officer, Paul Trambino. And then they drove to the state hygienic lab in Coralville and filmed the director of the lab, as well as the Iowa DOT director. The transportation department has been involved in organizing some of the Test Iowa sites. And it's really unprecedented. I have not been able to find any precedent for the governor and other state officials filming a promotional video for a for-profit company. But then what I was able to discover through public records requests was that this company sent documents ahead of the filming of these videos, sent documents with key talking points, key statements that they really wanted the officials to mention on camera. And some of those, it wasn't a script that people were supposed to read verbatim, but it was just, it was statements and points that they wanted them to bring up. And several of the officials did talk about those messages on camera.
There are lots of things we haven't got time to talk about, unfortunately, tonight. We've only got a few seconds left. Among them, the governor released her massive criminal justice bill last week. And while it had some supporters, it also had lots and lots of critics. 25 seconds. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, I like to look at the lobbyist declarations. And what I can tell you about this bill is that the only lobbyist registered in favor of this bill is the governor's own staffer, legislative liaison. Every law enforcement group in the state that has taken a position on this bill has registered against it. Also, the American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa and a number of other groups have registered against it. It was described as a bill that would ban racial profiling, but it really goes much further than that and would create new crimes, new punishments, a new ability for police to detain people with protests. And it would also prevent local governments from reducing the police budget in any way. They would lose all their state funding if they decrease their police budget at all. So the Iowa Association of Counties and League of Cities are very against the bill. So I don't see this bill moving. I just don't see any lobbying group with influence that's supporting it. And I see a lot of influential groups, including the law enforcement associations themselves, opposing it.
Laura, we are absolutely out of time. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for our listeners for joining us on Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. Laura Bellin and I promise we're going to be right back here next Monday night at 7 with a look at what makes news in the state legislature this week and what it means for all of us. Good night, everybody.